Your favorite Lagos Talks podcasts are now available on all online podcast platforms. Simply search for Lagos Talks 913 on your preferred podcast platform. Lagos Talks 91.3.
Join the conversation.
You're listening to 91.3 Lagos Talks. Critical thinking, it is, here on 91.3. Thursdays from 5 o'clock up until 6. I was going to say something else. Zill! Against all odds. Well, the odds are still there, but he's trying to push through. So we appreciate that. Yes. Shout out to you, Zill. Welcome. Good to have you join us. How has the past 7 days been for you?
So far, so good.
All right.
You have to forgive my voice. My throat is behaving like a stepchild.
Yeah, one of the obstacles I hinted or alluded to when I was introducing him.
But we will.
Among many other things, though.
Yes, we go rough.
I've never heard you speak in pidgin. It's like the first time I'm hearing you speak in pidgin.
I don't speak pidgin much, but I went to secondary school in Warri, FYI.
Are you serious? So how come you don't speak pidgin very fluently?
On radio, on our show?
No, I've not even heard you off air speaking casually with people in pidgin.
Like people in your office don't speak pidgin, do they?
We speak pidgin.
Yeah, never heard you guys.
We literally have a pidgin radio station just some doors away from here.
Have I been there?
You've not been to our sister station, Niger FM?
I think I've been there. I've been to a pidgin station before once.
Okay.
Yes. But like any language you don't speak often, you stop being very fluent. So I speak broken English now. I don't speak pidgin.
And so, is it because you're not confident in your fluency?
No, because pidgin as a language, especially the Niger Delta pidgin, it evolves.
Mm.
So mine is archaic.
And to sound corny,
it's full of slangs and all that. So it's like a different language entirely. Yeah. Mm. So if you're not living there, if you're not fluent, if you're not speaking regularly, all you're left with is broken English, which is just English that is bad.
Even the so-called pidgin is spoken in many other African countries, anglophone countries in sub-Saharan Africa. So
it's a thing.
But Port Harcourt pidgin is quite different from Warri pidgin in a way. You know, there are a lot of slangs.
When
they tell you about the slang, you just start laughing. It was until I started listening to some new school Afro pop artists that I knew what Ikelebe meant.
What does it mean?
Police.
Uh-huh.
So, Ikelebe. You know? And many other slangs like that.
Yep. Anyway. Yeah, so that's the thing with pidgin. Pidgin is full of slangs. I remember in secondary school, we had a slang, sonemi.
What does that mean?
It's not my business.
Is that a slang?
Yes, because it started from... you know, it's you talk to someone and say, look, your papa name, now my papa name.
Mm.
You know, and the son says, now my son name.
Okay.
And it evolved to son name me. Then you say it first, son name me. So basically, you want to say it's not my business. Then you just say son name me.
And it has evolved over time.
Yes, yeah, so I don't know what they say.
So
now.
It's now I don't know a cake pigeon.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's hilarious. I've got family who stay in Warri, so when they come over for the holidays, it's also hilarious when they're speaking. Yeah, sure. So they're always Warri, so it's like sure, and I'm like, you guys are just hilarious. Sorry, I'm laughing at you guys, but you guys are just cracking me up with the way you speak. Anyway, so today on Critical Thinking, we want to talk about you said it in a way, and I've forgotten. Pardon me. So my idea for today's conversation should be on peace.
Yes. What it means to be peaceful.
What it means to be peaceful. And we could go the route of, you know, conflict.
Yes.
You know, the whole ideology of an eye for an eye and how that impacts, you know, peace in itself. So we can, you know, dabble into that conversation. In this very interesting period now when, you know, the global landscape is quite tensed up, you know, the conflicts in the Middle East as well as Eastern Europe. So,
yeah,
we could look at things from that angle as well. So, Zill, what is it or what does it mean to be peaceful or to be a person of peace?
I think instead of looking at it from a global catastrophe perspective, let's look at it from interpersonal relationships, like basically how you live in your yard, your compound, with your neighbors on your street, whatever. Now, what it means to be peaceful, we generally misconstrue being peaceful with being quiet or being gentle or being meek and all those nice values that we like to throw around. But I'll say that what it means to be peaceful, being peaceful is a choice.
Okay.
It's a choice you make, and you choose to be peaceful with your neighbors, with your adversaries, with your colleagues, whatever, office politics. You choose being peaceful. Now, the fact that you choose being peaceful must imply that you have a choice to be something other than peaceful, which is
okay.
The opposite of peaceful, which is violent, right?
Okay.
No, so
you have the capacity to...
You must have the capacity to create
a violent situation.
Havoc. If you do not have the capacity to create havoc, you're not peaceful. You're harmless.
Okay. That's like a puppy.
Yeah, like an earthworm. An earthworm is harmless. A snake is not, a venomous snake is not harmless. If you go and taunt a snake and the snake decides to go away, the snake is peaceful. It has chosen, I ain't got your time. I don't want to bring violence to this place. I don't want the...
But does it come from a space of, I have a lot to lose, I don't have the time, or some sort of opportunity costs?
There are many reasons.
And all of that.
There are many reasons.
So if I say I want to be a peaceful person, am I thinking about what I could possibly lose, what I have to lose?
There are many reasons.
And choosing to be peaceful?
There are many reasons. You're driving on the road and somebody bumps your car from behind. You come out and the person jacks your shirt. And you tell the person, look, just forget about it, let's go. And the person leaves you and you both leave. At that point in time, without knowing what could have happened, it's not easy to tell if you're being peaceful or if you're just harmless or if you're avoiding being beaten up. But then when the person drives off, you then notice he has police escort in front of him. Then you know he chose peace. Because he had the option to have rained a lot of violence on you. Or you find out you get into a fight at a bar, you slap somebody, and then the person holds you tight like a bear hug and says, guys, let's go, let's cool down. Then your friends come and pull you aside and you're there jumping and saying, I would have killed you. Then you leave and the next day you're watching TV and you see the same guy as the national karate champion. Then you know he chose peace.
And you're grateful for life.
You know, actually, funny story. When NYSC camp, long time ago, we were just hanging around. And then all of a sudden, there was dust. You know how there's a skirmish? There was just dust. Yeah. And there was this guy on the floor, and there was this girl standing over him. And we're like, ah, did he trip? Did he fall? And then he charged the high again, and then there was dust again, and then he was on the floor. She was standing over him. Anyway, apparently she was the national female karate champion or something.
He wasn't informed.
He was not well informed. So a lot of times, so to your question, why do people choose peace? There are many reasons. One could be, one, a lot of self-restraint. They don't see the need to bring violence. The issue is not worth the violence it would bring. The issue is not worth the repercussions it would bring. The issue is not worth the damage to self-esteem and reputation it will bring. It could be concern. They look at you, they size you up, and they are not sure that if they handle you as they should, you will survive it. And they don't want to spend the next couple of weeks in prison discussing with police how they broke somebody's head. The issue could be cowardice. I'm just afraid of what would happen. You know, so there could be very many reasons.
So that option or that reason of cowardice doesn't remove the fact that a person can indeed create havoc. So what exactly is the person being cowardly about?
For example, you could be a... Okay, when I say cowardice, let's split it into two. The willingness to walk away from conflict, right, is not what I'm talking about. It's the inability, is the walking away from conflict because you don't have the ability to sustain the conflict. Right? And you know that the damage to you may be more, you cannot bear it. That's different. And that could come from, we could call it, it could look like cowardice, but it could also be a lot of self-restraint. I just don't want to be here. And, you know, somebody running from a fight could look like a coward. He could be running because he does not want to damage you. And you can find that a lot in, what do you call them? Man and woman relationships. What do you call them? Relationships.
Yeah.
And let me use a very easily relatable analogy. You have a balloon, and the balloon becomes best friends with a rose.
Right? Okay.
And they gist and they laugh and they play. And one day, the balloon wants to fight. They have a quarrel, but the rose really likes the balloon. And the balloon charges at the rose. What would you do as a rose that is full of thorns? When a balloon that you like is charging towards you to fight?
So it values your relationship.
Yes, he will run.
And backs off.
He will back off because if the balloon touches the rose, that's the end of the balloon. The rose does not have to do anything. So sometimes when you're in relationships, some people know themselves. They may know that they don't even need to exert effort to damage you. And so when you bring a fight to them, they run. And you always think you have the upper hand because they are running. And you think this guy is harmless or he's a coward. Other people say, stay and fight. And he's like, I know what I have inside me. I know how toxic I can be. I know how dangerous I can be. But this is somebody I have a lot of respect for, I love, or whatever. This conflict will not last 10 seconds and this person will be over. So it's not always easy to tell. But the whole point is, if you want to be a peaceful person, you must have first developed a lot of capacity to bring a lot of disaster. And then when you choose something other than disaster, then you're peaceful. If you don't have that capacity for disaster, then you're just harmless. So back to the geopolitics you were talking about. The countries that have nuclear weapons are the ones that sit down to negotiate peace. When there's no nuclear weapon involved, they get invaded.
Oh my goodness. So you're saying a country like ours, Nigeria, doesn't have a place on that peace talk table, peace talk table.
So countries like Afghanistan or Iraq will get invaded. Yeah? Countries like North Korea that I mentioned will not get invaded. Russia will not get invaded. Ukraine will. And it's just the way peace works. When you talk about people, when two communities are fighting and you go there to negotiate peace, the entity negotiating peace must have more than enough violence to take care of the two communities. Otherwise, they will just extinguish you and continue their fight. So when we talk about peace, I know, so I can't remember who it was that said that there cannot be peace without violence. Peace is the choice you make other than violence, which means violence is a choice you can make. If a man walks in here with three bouncers armed with guns and they say, Zil, get out of here. When I leave here, it's not because I'm being peaceful. It's because I've assessed the situation. And in that situation, I can bring no violence. So in that situation, I'm harmless. And so that I don't bring harm to myself, I will exit the room. Now, if you come in here, just you, and it's some 4'5" guy that weighs 20 kilos that I can beat up, and says, Zil, do this. If I choose to do it, it's because I've chosen peace. You know, somebody walks into your office or your house and rains abuses on you and you choose to do nothing. The only way you're choosing peace is because you have the option to choose to do something and you have decided against it.
And that makes you peaceful.
Yes. Peace is a choice you make. It's not a situation you find yourself in. It's not a circumstance you cannot help. It's a very active choice you make. And back to, so we'll be keep swinging from geopolitics to interpersonal relationships with your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your spouse, your partner, whatever you want to call it, does something. And you decide, you know what? I'll let it pass. And the person keeps goading you and taunting you. And hey, if you're a man, do this. Or I dare you, if you know you can. You know, all those kind of things. And tell yourself, there's no need. Now, once in a while, and again, I am not an advocate for violence, but as it is with, and so that I don't get misconstrued, with my pet dog. I lost my pet dog on February 14th. With that one, I'm going to start that same training with the new one we have. But that particular dog, when it was about 9 months, so it was quite big. Part of the training, I would bring it into the house. I know dogs like to play. And we would play rough. Like a fight. It's biting me. I'm throwing it. I'm slamming it. I'm sitting on it. You know, it's part of the training so that the dog understands this guy can beat me up. So that when it's misbehaving later and I come into the picture, it knows I fought this guy before.
I know what comes to shove, it's going to take me out.
So sometimes you find that in what's that thing called? In military conflicts. Sometimes that's why you hear of warning shots. Military will shoot in the air. Basically, we've come here. This is violence. We don't want to have to go down that route. So can we talk? You know,
could
you hear
the easy
term,
way. Or we could do
sheath
it the hard
your
way.
Swords. You've heard that term a lot.
Yeah.
You know, sheath your swords. Sheathing your sword is a choice. It's a choice because you have a sword. If only one person had a sword, he would not sheathe it.
If you have a sword, I have a sword.
Yeah, so now for us to talk, two of us can do a lot of damage to each other. Do we really want that? Okay, let's put the swords down so that we can talk. Now, you've also heard the term, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. If you pull out your sword and I pull out a machine gun, there can be no peace. What we have is a subordination. Because you will assess your knife, you will assess my gun and you realize, if I charge this guy with this penknife, he will shoot me. So what we have in the end is not peace. It's subordination. So, but if I with the gun decide, now you know what, putting the gun aside, let's talk. I have chosen peace. In that circumstance, you're just harmless. Yeah. So it's important to separate the two. And a lot of times in a lot of conflict, people think they've chosen peace, but for you to choose peace, you must have the ability to bring violence. Your opponent or opposition also has the ability to bring violence. And because both of you want to, what's the word, subdue the other, you will attempt it. It's when you've attempted to subdue and failed, then both of you now say, okay, let's...
But is bringing violence enough? Or bringing the scale of violence that could possibly, you know, destroy the opposition. So if your level of violence, like you said, a pen knife and someone holding a machine gun, it's also violence if it swings at you and cuts you or something, as a person with a pen knife, compared to the person with a machine gun.
If I have a knife and I let you get within arm's length of me, then I'm stupid.
Yeah, so damage.
Shoot in the air,
okay, let's not even use knife.
Ground,
let's use
shoot your leg.
Let's use ammunition, right?
Yeah.
So someone has a pistol, right? And someone has an M16 or something, right? So they're different kind of guns.
And the M16 might have only one bullet left, and the pistol might have six. But you don't know that.
But you don't know that.
Yeah.
You assume the worst because
deception.
The person is coming.
And that's strategic. So, for example, let's go back to the geopolitics. That's why countries let everybody know
what
how
they have.
Much nuclear arsenal they have, how many soldiers they have, how many jet fighters they have. That's the reason, so that there's no ambiguity. You have 50 of this, I have 200. If we go to fight 200 versus 50, you don't stand a very good chance here. That's the reason Otherwise, you would think that going to war, you want to hide your ammunition so you wipe out your enemy. But you see, in many instances of these types of conflicts, the intention is not a wipeout. The intention is an avoidance of violence. And in order to properly avoid violence, I have to demonstrate the magnitude of violence I can bring. You would also demonstrate the magnitude of violence you can bring. And if both of us don't see sense, then we obliterate each other. So look at the animal kingdom. When animals want to fight, what they do is they make themselves larger than normal. So let's pick the simplest fight of a chicken. When a chicken wants to fight, it spreads out its wings, the head, the feathers on the neck come out. It makes itself, it bloats up, yeah? When a cobra wants to fight, it doesn't stand, what does it do? It rises and it bloats out the neck.
Yeah.
When a bear wants to fight, it gets on 2 feet and not four. And you find that it's normal in human animal nature that when you're about to go into a fight, you make yourself bigger. Even sometimes cats, when they want to fight, they stand. You make yourself bigger, basically telling the opponent, this is, do you want all of this in your face? You know, and then if the cat stands and the bear stands, the cat is probably going to be like, oh, this isn't going to work. And the cat will run away.
Yeah, reconsider. Or
the cat is not the cat will be asking for peace.
By that point, it's not peaceful.
But the bear is like, hey, this is not, we've passed that level now, come here, you know. So, when it comes to those type of conflicts, sometimes you want to show the opponent, see the level of violence, you know. And then you see it in people fighting, they're about to fight, they take bottle and they break it. Why are they doing that?
They're showing that they're capable of inflicting injury.
This is the level of violence I'm willing to escalate to. Broken bottle means daggers, means blood. We're not talking of slaps or tapping your head, you know. Do you want to take it there, you know? And then the other person says, me too, he too, he breaks his own two bottles, you know.
And then one of them inflicts cuts on himself.
As if, see, whatever you're going to do to me, I can do it to myself. You know, the communication is basically, you're trying to show the level of violence I can bring is not worth both of us engaging in. Right? That's what it is. So yes, it is necessary sometimes to demonstrate. And that's why you have in North Korea, in the Chinese peninsula, or that area, they're always doing nuclear tests. Some people think, oh, they are testing their weapons. Yes, they are. They are also demonstrating that this thing I say I have, it's not a bluff. I really, really, truly have
it. We saw the one that, you know, America had a problem with North Korea, that they did some tests close to the shores of Western US, and it became a problem. Spoke about it for a while until it died down.
You know, because I know the issue I think they have with North Korea, I mean, apart from all the geopolitical issues and all that, they're not really sure how much North Korea has. So they're not sure the level of damage North Korea can. They know they can do damage. They don't know how much, and they don't want to find out. At the end of the day, you look at all the thousands of nuclear warheads in the world, other than the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, nobody has used one again. That was a demonstration that we have it, we're willing to use it, and it's a deterrent. It's been a deterrent for, what, 2-3 generations? Nobody wants to experience that again, right? So, yeah, violence is not always in, how will I put it? The violence that demonstrates that the option of peace is on the table is not a damage inflicting violence, if I put it that way. So, which is why I use the military. I'll shoot in the air, and you hear, I'll use my heavy artillery gun and shoot in the air. You've shot and I heard, bah, bah. Yeah? Then I shoot and I hear, dum, 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 dum. And they'll say, okay, let's talk. Your quack, quack, it's not going to do very much. So can you put that thing aside? And then and sometimes you do that, you know, people get angry and somebody slams a table. A lot of that is innate, it's instinctive. It's not a conscious action. It's just a demonstration that we can do this. You know, there's this book I read, Cows, Pigs, Wars, and Witches. That's the title of the book. Very interesting book. And in the area, when he was talking about wars, it's talking about conflict. It was talking about some ancient ethnic groups that they used to go to war very often. There were small communities, a few hundred, a few thousand. But they go to war. So if you had a few hundred men, you remove the children, remove the women, you go to war. Invariably, both sides will damage each other so much that both tribal communities will cease to exist and will be taken over by somebody that was not even involved in the war. Because if you had a war of 200 people fighting 200 people, at the end of the day, maybe you would kill, just for argument's sake, one will kill 100, one will kill 150. Out of the 50 left, 30 are badly wounded. Out of the 100 left, 50 are badly wounded. But you've won the war. But you don't have enough manpower. But you're
significantly depleted.
Yes, you're significantly depleted, that's the word. And you don't have enough manpower to now protect the community you've won and yours.
Mm.
Then when somebody else shows up with his own 200, he now takes over both communities.
Spoils. Mm.
So they started realizing fighting each other is detrimental to both our existence.
Except if I'm significantly superior to...
Yes, 1,000 fighting 200, I'll take you out. Yeah, but if it's fairly equal, if we both fight, a third party will come and take all our women, our children, our farmland. There was no point. So they evolved their warfare into a demonstration of warfare. And so they give a notice and say, next year's harvest season, we're going to fight. So what they will do is, over the next 1 year, all the men, all the women, everybody, they go to the farm. And they farm and they work hard. Then the war basically is who can destroy the most resources. So you come and you bring a wheelbarrow of corn and set it on fire. As in, basically showing that these are the resources I have. And the other one, like, you burnt a wheelbarrow of corn. They bring a tipper load of yam, a tipper load of corn, a tipper load of something else and burn the whole thing. Now you then have to match that. Now, if you can't match that, then they've taken you over. So now on a few occasions, because you're doing it somewhere, maybe around the palace, in burning the resources you had, the palace got burnt. And that is the maximum amount of resource. I'm not willing to burn my king's palace. So you've won the war, then you take over my community. And in reading that book, I started to see how spraying money might have evolved. Because spraying money, if you ask me, so this war that we're talking about was, instead of destroying human lives, let's destroy the sustenance of human life, food.
How
much are you willing to destroy of your sustenance? What you want to call your riches or whatever. How much are you willing to destroy? They are not planting it, they are destroying it. And I started to understand the possibility that our behavior around spraying money may have evolved from that kind of practice. Because what is spraying money? How much of your sustenance, how much of your resource are you willing to throw away? Right? Just toss it. Just keep tossing it. And guess what? When people are challenging each other in spraying, you're spraying 500 naira, then somebody else comes, starts spraying 1,000 naira, then somebody else comes and starts spraying bundles, then somebody else comes and starts spraying 100. You know? And it's almost like, okay, when the person outsprays you, what do? You go and sit down. You go and sit down. I don't have as much resource
and
to
you,
burn.
You maybe are successful at having a reputation for being wealthy.
Yes. And then I remember in a club I went to once in the UK, there was this group of Russians sitting on one table, the group of, I assumed they were Nigerians. I believed they were Nigerians. I didn't interact with them. I believed strongly they were Nigerians. And there was this eye contact between the two groups, you know, and you could see they were, one group bought champagne. The other group bought a bouquet of champagne. The other group bought a bouquet of champagne and started washing their hands with the champagne. No point. Then the other group bought Magnum. You know, loads. And I could just see burning resources to win. And like I said, conflict shows up like that, where you have to demonstrate that you have the capacity, you know, or even in the financial sector or in the corporate world in general, your competition, sometimes you demonstrate that you, this competition, I can take you out, and you go and buy a company that is close in size to down. I have the resources, you know, you don't want to mess with, or you go and hire their chief inventor and pay him double or three times the salary you were paying. You know, and there are two companies, I won't mention the two company names, but there are two leaders in their industry in Nigeria, practically the only two. They probably control 80-90% market share. At a point in the 90s, I'm aware, 90s, early 2000, they had a very silent agreement, not spoken, but silent, excuse me, that they would not poach each other's staff because they realized that it was detrimental to both their existence. Because what would happen is one would think, I need this skill that this guy has and I need some of your inside secrets. So they would come to that person, offer the person twice as much money, twice as much benefits, and take the person. What do you think the other company does?
Retaliate.
Retaliate. Go to you as well. Find somebody that is equivalent. And they keep cannibalizing each other's stuff.
But that was because perhaps they were at parity when it comes to
That's the point.
So influence.
First person that pushed, the other person retaliated, and they did it back and forth until they realized all our secrets are going to end up there, and it's not sustainable.
Not worth it,
and then they both had a silent agreement not to hire from each other.
They were waving the wand.
So sometimes that demonstration of your capacity to bring violence is necessary in order to maintain peace. Look at the United Nations peacekeeping forces. They don't go around with chalk and flowers. They go around with guns. A lot of guns. Because they have to demonstrate, we're here for peace. We have no interest in your conflict. But if you bring your conflict to us, we will neutralize you.
Do you think that is why, for example, a country like the US would invest in movies that show the might of their military?
Yes.
So you hear a lot of
propaganda,
a lot of war movies hitting the cinema, the big screens, with the budget off the roof. You know, we know about the SWAT forces. We know about the Navy SEALs and all of that. Yes. We see the demonstration with Hollywood.
Yes.
And they're giving the world an impression that this is an idea of what we can do.
So I've said there are a couple of reasons why the United States is a world power. And I think chief of them is Hollywood. I mean, apart from the fact that they've deceived the whole world and convinced, let me not say deceived, they've convinced the whole world one way or the other to use their local currency as everybody's currency. So they control everything in that regard economically. But if you look at Hollywood, if you know the number of times, and in fact, just yesterday I posted on my WhatsApp status that when people tell you things like Nigeria is the only country in the world that, I would say they are basing, more often than not, if not most of the time, they are basing their entire opinion based on Hollywood. They've seen this in America. It does not happen like that. Ask them, have you been to the America? But they've seen it on TV. So Hollywood has made us believe a lot of things. And we don't realize it's fiction. You watch CSI, for example. CSI makes you believe if you go and commit a crime, even if it's one eyelash you left behind, they will find it. They will pull out your DNA from that. Excuse me, eyelash.
And then fish you out.
And fish you out from anywhere. They'll show you satellites that from space they can look at what you're doing on your phone. You know, and then someone said with all of that they showed us in Hollywood, it took them 50 years to find Osama bin Laden. You know. So all those things are part of the propaganda that we have this capacity. Don't make us use it. So yes, it's all part of it. The same thing with Russia, the same thing with China. The same thing with any country says, look, we have this amount of nuclear weapons. We need to be on this table to discuss peace. Then they look at your nuclear weapons. They're like, yep. Look at your jet fighters. They look at all those things and they say, you know what? Come, let's talk. Now, why is a country like Togo not on the United Nations Security Council? So basically, you want to bring peace.
And you don't have the capacity.
The measure of peace you can bring is the measure of violence you can create. How much violence can you create? How fast can we neutralize your violence?
Why should we listen to you?
Yeah. So you come to a fight.
If you don't listen to you, what happens?
What happened? What? Yeah. So if you want to bring this peace and we don't agree to your terms, what are you going to do? Nothing. Just they're harmless. They just you're like an,
you're an earthworm.
Just flick it aside, put some salt on it.
And but when you come and say, okay, this is my arsenal, I've got this and that.
Yeah.
And I'm like this and that, like some world powers, some world leaders.
Yeah,
they've got different levels of temperament.
Yes.
So apart from the fact that they can inflict that level of havoc, they are also unstable.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't want to mess with someone who is not quote unquote reasonable with you.
Yep,
right.
Yep,
so there's also that too. Okay. If you have contributions, you can reach out to me. The phone lines are open 0809-234-5913. What is your idea of peace? Now, I'll take calls shortly. I'll take calls on WhatsApp and calls on our phone box. So let me just take this one quickly and let's get talking. 91.3, hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening to you, welcome.
I'm calling from Lekki.
Oh, from Lekki, good to have you join us, welcome.
If I quote him, you
used to say
strength to peace. So you demonstrate your strength so that you'll be able to negotiate and make peace.
Who are you quoting?
Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You say strength to peace. So you demonstrate that so that you can come to the table when you are scared of you.
The line is. Yeah.
I'm in agreement with Mr. Deal. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Interestingly, Kolawole, you've watched rugby matches in Australia and all.
Yeah. That. This is it. That's haka.
Yeah. That thingy. What are they doing? Is that intimidation?
I don't know. Yeah. Some sort of maybe like scare tactic.
Yeah, it's an intimidation thing.
So we can show our guys are strong and crazy.
Yeah, to intimidate you. Or before a boxing match, there's this stare down.
Yeah,
you know,
the stare down.
Just to show, look, you know. This is how much of violence I can bring. It's like we were saying, if you sometimes, which is why we say in global geopolitics, you don't get involved in a proxy war. Some countries want to demonstrate how much violence they can bring by invading another country, like what happened in Ukraine.
All right. Hello. Welcome. 91.3. What's your name?
Yeah, my name is.
Your name is what? Ebube, right?
Yes.
All right, join the conversation, Ebube.
I'll ask the question too.
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead. Yeah, we can hear you.
The question is, you want to speak to somebody, and then you find out that...
Oh, dear. Not sure that the lines are peaceful with you. Oh,
the lines are bringing a lot of violence.
They're showing their capabilities. Hello?
Good evening, Mr. Zio.
Hi, good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Kolawole.
Good to have you. Welcome. What's your name?
Yeah, nah, it's going to
talk. Okay.
Hi, good afternoon. Good evening.
Got my hair loose. Yeah, yeah. Mr. Zio, I did good, so.
Oh, no, how are you doing?
I'm good, though. Fine. So, Mr. Zio, please, can we talk on the technicality of keeping peace? Because I understand that the cost, it costs to keep or to maintain peace, and at the same time, it costs to even cause violence or chaos. Not even talk about instigating or intimidating people. So, what are the technicalities of maintaining and keeping peace? And peace, Robert.
What do you mean by technicalities? I don't understand. What do you mean by technicalities?
Okay. Say, for example, in business environment, you have a customer that comes to price a goods, which you know how much you are selling it. Or after selling that same goods, he complains and returns that goods, asking for you to replace it. Then it's either you take it on violence, child's parable, you want to maintain peace because you want to keep that relationship. Because it might bring referrals, it will keep buying from you. So, how do you see it? Like, what is it? Is it very much technicality or just normal thing to just maintain the thing? That's what I ask.
That's customer care, Ebuka. That's not peace of art. That's just basic customer care. If you sell something defective, you take it back. I mean, it's.
Or you're saying the customer is being difficult with you, and you don't want to jeopardize the relationship. I don't think that's like a conflict now. That's I don't think that's a situation of conflict.
Let me rephrase that. I don't see that as a situation of conflict. But in terms of maintaining peace, it's expensive to maintain peace.
Mm.
You know, like someone said, if you think education is expensive, try violence, try ignorance. So if you think peace is expensive, try war. Because war is destructive.
Yeah.
So even if the cost of maintaining peace is equal to the cost of war, the difference is that in times of peace, you can grow and develop. In times of war, you cannot. Mm. If the when I say cost, if the cost of ammunition used in maintaining peace is the same cost of ammunition used for a war, the added destruction and stagnation and retrogression that a war will cost you far more. So even though people think peace, maintaining peace is expensive, you need a lot of force or demonstration of force to maintain peace and it costs money, the alternative, which is war, is far more destructive. So peace is always worth it.
Okay, we have a call coming through. Lagos Talks, Critical Thinking, hello.
Yeah. My name is Nelson from Fire.
Nelson.
Yes.
All right, Nelson, go ahead. Innocent. Oh, Innocent. Beg your pardon. Go ahead, yes. Innocent.
My question is based on internal issue within country. Talking about peace. For instance, when a particular region is seeking a dialogue with the government, and the government is not responding in a way of coming to the round table and discuss it, rather like using a force to settle, is that a peace? Or I don't know, is it the right way to negotiate a peace? You know, trying to use force to negotiate.
What do you suggest?
What do you think? So if two people are fighting and you want to separate them, and they both want to fight
they are seeking for justice, but you're not giving them the attention.
I'm trying to get the picture clearly.
You need force to clamp them down.
Okay.
If you use force to clamp something down, that's not peace. It's subduing. So you're saying one party has significantly more strength than the other, right?
And that's established.
Once that is established, that's not only when there are two people in conflict and one has far more capacity for violence than the other, it is now the prerogative of the more powerful person to choose peace. The other person is harmless.
But I think it's coming from the angle of the lower or the weaker entity is seeking perhaps justice to a cause.
You cannot have justice without peace.
It takes the stronger entity to implement that justice.
You cannot have justice without peace. You cannot have peace without the capacity of both parties to bring at least nearly equal violence.
Okay, now I was asking
when
about...
When one is significantly more violent than the other, then the less violent one will always attempt to seek justice, but will struggle to find it.
Hello?
Hello.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Good to have you join us. Hey,
Val,
how are you doing?
Evening.
Welcome.
I greet you. Yeah, I'm doing great. Wow. I don't know. My own idea of it, I think, is extreme... sacrifice or tolerance, fear of the unknown. Why I say that is because I think the cost of peace is far greater than the cost of war. And in a situation where a nation or a city or whatever wants to flex muscles and all that in order to push some kind of perception or impression towards another city or a nation, and they then come to the table of negotiation, I think it's basically fear of the unknown. But if the other nation decides to match the nation with a might, power for power, or strength, or test for test, they will end up being a compromise or a sacrifice. So I think for peace, it's extreme sacrifice for me. And I think it's far greater than war.
Extreme sacrifice.
Hopefully we've all watched John Wick. John Wick was living peaceably, if you remember. He had retired, He was living in peace.
But he had a crazy reputation anyway.
Yes, that's why he had the ability
to cause chaos.
That's why I call it peace. Everybody knew the ability he had, and everybody left him alone.
Do you recall that scene at the petrol station?
Yes.
And then when the boy was taken back to his father, and the other guys informed his father what the boy had done to John Wick.
Yes.
And like, John Wick?
Yes. Yeah, so
you did that to John Wick?
This guy looks harmless.
But usually, I think is the gang are capable of chaos,
yeah,
right?
So you think
but when you was John Wick,
because yeah, you're in a gang, you think you have chaos. You meet somebody alone, you don't assess properly, you attack the person. The person now brings violence. Now remember, the boy's father then called for peace.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, at that point, it was kind of, you know, because they knew if it was not John Wick, do you think he would have made that call? No. So John Wick had established his capacity for violence. It was not in dispute. That he had retired meant he chose that life. And they left him alone. Now, you went to stir the hornet's nest. When they called John Wick for peace, what did he do? He hung up. Basically saying, this violence you've woken up, until I take you all out, there is no peace. And in that circumstance, all you try to do is to match violence with violence. If one party that has capacity for a lot of violence refuses peace, you must bring greater violence to neutralize them. There is no discussion. So that's the reason people that understand amass the capacity for violence. But if you do not have the capacity for restraint and self-control, then you are going to create chaos.
All right. Okay, I think we need to wrap it up right now. The calls are coming through, but we can continue on our X platform. Zeal is very much active on X. He wasn't going to do this today until he said, no, let me do it for the people. Because he's under the weather a bit. But can you tell? So he hasn't chosen peace with flu. Or what's it that's doing you?
I don't even know. My throat is behaving like a stepchild. That's all I can say.
Anyway, fantastic conversation. If you want to listen back on this, keep tabs on our podcast platform. Even if you don't have a subscription, I believe there are quite a number of podcast platforms that are free. Just search for Lagos Talks 913. Lagos Talks 913. Anywhere you get your podcast from, mostly free. I don't think you pay for podcasts as much as you pay for streaming music. So you can enjoy this edition of Critical Thinking. Let me see if I can squeeze in this. Francis texting from Canada says, thank God we have Zeal in the house today. Zeal, would you consider it as a wisdom or strength for someone who has the power to inflict pain, destroy or get revenge, but decides to choose peace? Where does knowledge come in this as well? I think there should be a continuation of the topic you started 2 weeks ago about wisdom, knowledge, and kindness. I believe you wanted to bring in the influence of society before we ran out of time. So first question is saying, someone has a capacity to create havoc and chooses peace. Is it a sign of wisdom or strength? That's his question. In like a few seconds, because we need to go on like less than 30 seconds.
Could be both. The fact that somebody has the capacity for violence and chooses peace could mean the person is wise, could mean the person has inner strength, could mean the person has foresight, understands that there's no need for that. I mean, there could be many reasons. But the point is, you don't want those kind of people to unleash their violence, especially when you've assessed that their capacity is greater than yours.
All right, fantastic. Zeal, what's your handle, quickly?
Best place to reach me is Twitter at ZEAL_A, that's Zeal_A.
All right. And my handle is my name, Kolawole Falodun, KolaWoleFalodun. That's my handle. Let's get talking even beyond the mic.
Your favorite Lagos Talks podcasts are now available on all online podcast platforms. Simply search for Lagos Talks 913 on your preferred podcast platform. Lagos Talks 91.3.
Join the conversation.